Welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. These are complicated times that require sophisticated techniques. That's the tagline that we're going with today. We're going to peer into some words and some message building practices. That's what rhetoric does. Rhetoric is obsessive about working on messages before they're sent out in the world. And then when they are sent out in the world, taking them apart to see what people did. I'm Dr. Dan, master rhetorician. I'm claiming that status these days. Late night comedy writer from Hollywood, founder of Rhetoric Warriors. The podcast does three main things. I talk to comedians about their careers in politics because I think that's fun. I try to convert people who I think need to be converted. Usually that's people from the right because I think they've drifted off some of the axes that make us more easily democratic. And that concerns me. And I talk to persuasion pros and rhetoricians. Especially persuasion pros. I have a few rhetoric academics that I talk to, but I really like to pull out people who are doing things out in the world actively. And that's what today will be is an episode of Persuasion Pros. Met this guy on Lunch Club. If you haven't been there, go jump on. I love Lunch Club. You get to talk to people all over the world and they don't even mind if you talk about business a little bit. So it's like cold calling without having to cold call. It's pretty cool. This guy's a little bit on the youth side. He's the youth side of the business. He's just digging into the world of business and creative messaging building with his company, Boulder Media, which is located oddly in Denver, but that's still workable. I want to hear what it looks like getting started in all this craziness that I've been digging around in for 30 years. So welcome the CBO and Director of Partnerships at Boulder Media, Jeremy Elder.
Thanks for having me.
There you go. That's the intro.
Awesome. Love it. Love it.
So we were just talking, you're on the ring of fire. Everything's on fire. It's the planet fire and y'all are getting smoky.
Oh yeah. The new norms out here, unfortunately.
So are you originally a Colorado guy or did you go to college in college? College in Colorado.
Yep. Yeah. So I was actually born in Michigan. And then when I was about two, my family moved to Hawaii. So I grew up in Maui.
Really?
On the ocean, yeah. And I just came out to Colorado for college. Went to CU Boulder for 4 years, and that's where I met all my other teammates. We started Boulder Media House as a way to make some extra beer money my sophomore year. And
what does that mean? So like your sophomores in college, you start Boulder Media. What were you guys doing? What were you shooting? Like frat houses, you know?
Yep. Yeah, we were doing concerts, festivals, and Greek life, and the occasional commercial project in the first year. And I remember, that first year we were actually the in-house media team for a festival in Utah, which was really cool. It was our biggest project ever at that time. And it was just a lot of different odd gigs. We all came from different backgrounds. That's kind of why we joined forces. I was a lot in the music industry. One of the others was in sports, another one in the fashion realm. And then the fourth, he was in the commercial realm. So we thought, hey, you know, we bring all our networks together. We can work on bigger projects and we're not kind of butting heads in Boulder competing for gigs. So that was the mentality.
Yeah, interesting. And, yeah, that's an interesting approach. Like start your own. Like a four-part business strategy there from the beginning.
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of like a what's the word I'm looking for? Starts with a C, I think. It's like a collaborative community, sort of under one
cabal.
Roof.
Cabal. You guys are a cabal.
I mean, I don't know about that, but yeah, it was just you know, it was a strategic move.
It's kind of what. I'm going to make me think of all the C words that apply in this setting.
But yeah, it was just a way, you know, it was a strategy that we thought would help us kind of make a little more money. And I don't think any of us really had intentions of continuing this after college, but it just picked up year after year. And I mean, now we have a 3,000 square foot warehouse in Rhino, just outside downtown Denver. Got a studio there. We have about 12 people on the team. So it's a real thing.
When you say like things just kept going. Were you guys, like, where did your funding come from? Were you funding the whole thing on gigs, or did you have some kind of pile of money that you started with?
It was all bootstrapped. We each owned the camera gear that we had. So that was kind of like, I mean, that was our main asset, and I mean, still is. Need cameras to make good videos and take pictures.
I had a guy on Lunch Club this weekend who just popped up like Jesus walking on the water. I'm like, what camera is that? And he's like, oh, it's my old Red camera.
Yep.
I'm like, yeah,
yep.
for your video chats. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
He had it plugged into his computer.
Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing. It looked like he was, you know, otherworldly. It was pretty cool.
That's funny. Thanks.
So you do need good. You need equipment.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Definitely good equipment. There is still the saying, you know, though, that it's not the equipment, it's the people. And I think that's very true.
It's both.
I think it's very true.
It's both.
Good equipment. You can create amazing things. If you have someone that doesn't know what they're doing behind it, it's pointless. But I mean, if you have someone that knows everything they can do behind an iPhone, they can still make something awesome. And I feel like we see that a lot with, you know, a lot of user generated content. And I mean, we get hit up for commercials. They're like, no, like, can you film this on a phone, or can you flip the Red? And we're like, okay, we can probably do one of those. But yeah, it's interesting how I feel like sometimes cell phone content, especially for social media marketing, just comes into play. And I mean, at that point, it's really the person behind the camera that's directing the whole shoot to make it.
Yeah. We're talking about like cell phone cameras, like they're some, you know, cheap piece of junk. That's an amazing camera compared to what most has been used for most of history.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And it'll be cool to see what they come out with in the next 5-10 years and kind of where that technology is going. But yeah, we bootstrapped the whole thing. I think our only expense was a QuickBooks account in the beginning. And so we would just pay for that with the money we made off gigs.
So did you initially float up as the business guy? We talked about this a little bit, I think, when we were chatting on Lunch Club, that I've seen a lot of young companies and production companies here in Austin, you know, and they come along and typically, you know, it's like that. They've got some kind of training from the university. They've got some equipment from wherever. So they're viable. And then they've got some connections. A lot of times it's friends and family where you start, you know, with gigs. And if they do a good job, you can start picking up other things around it. But a lot of these places wanted to do creative work, really. I mean, they were doing commercial work, you know, to pay the bills and, you know, putting their effort into it, but they really want to do creative stuff. But what they never had was business people. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always a couple of creatives who are struggling to do the business side. So did you from the start, were you the business guy or?
No, there's our CEO. He actually went to Leeds, which is the business school at CU Boulder. And so he has a business degree. I did a minor in business, but I kind of took up the brand partnerships and business development side of things because I love talking to people. And I like talking to people a lot more than the rest of the people on the team.
There you go.
So that's kind of how I got slotted into that role. And I love it. It's fun. I get to meet all kinds of new people. This past week, Bailey, the CEO, he and I, we were at Outdoor Retailer, which is a huge convention in Denver for outdoor brands. And, you know, we were just roaming the floor for 3 days, meeting and talking to new people and, you know, getting shut down and then, you know, getting the confidence boosted back up, you know, two stands later. But I love it. I think it's a fun challenge. And, you know, building those relationships and those long lasting relationships is our biggest goal, you know, because
what was your strategy? Like, did you have it's so funny, like, again, coming from my background in Hollywood, there are actually all these sort of pitch strategies and, you know, message, you know, sort of sales, basically it's all sales strategies that creatives have come up with. Like, one of the big ones in comedy, at least, is you bring in the kind of the producer, the architect, the creator, the writer, but you bring the comedy talent in as well. And so the comedian's whole job is just to constantly pepper everything with jokes, to make it entertaining, and they're good at it. And then the other guy plays the, you know, straight person about here's the business and here's the project.
Right.
So it's that, you know, good cop, bad cop.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our big strategy, I mean, we were there to sell, but more importantly, we were there to meet people and grow our network and build relationships first. And then kind of the business second, but a lot of it just kind of flowed naturally. Bailey and I, we each have very different life experience. I think me growing up kind of all over the place, and Bailey also grew up all over the place, came from a military family. And he is also currently in the military too. So that was a really good thing. So if we saw a booth that had anything that resembled anything, you know, tactical or military related, that was automatically like, all right, Bailey, like you go talk to them, you lead this conversation. And then, you know, for a lot of the surf brands and outdoor lifestyle companies, they sponsor a lot of athletes in Hawaii. And so that was kind of, you know, where I could connect with them. So there were just different ways of connecting with everyone that was at the convention. And, you know, some people it was just to meet them. Sometimes they had a video that was playing on a screen and we tell them, hey, we work in the media realm and we're just looking at your video.
It's awful. Yeah. Just go up and attack them. That's your opener.
More of like, you know, when did you guys get this done? You know, but I think the biggest challenge through that all is showing the difference between a videographer and an agency. And we meet in the middle there. So with a lot of freelancers, one of the biggest headaches that a lot of the clients have is they're never on time and they're kind of a pain in the ass to work with. And that's not all of them. That's just some of them. They give a bad rep to everyone else. But then the big agencies, you know, they have this really big upfront cost to get their services. So we, you know, one of our selling points is we're kind of in the middle ground there. So it lowers the barrier of entry and they get a full in-house team and they don't have to deal with anything and any of the pains in the asses that they might otherwise deal with.
Is that pitch based on the fact that you guys are in Denver versus like an LA or New York agency, something like that? Or how do you pitch that your costs aren't as high as the big agencies? Just no overhead, you're just young and don't need much money? What is it?
We're young, and I think that's one of the biggest things is none of us have families to feed, don't have mortgages. The only other things that we have to feed are a couple dogs, and they're a lot cheaper than kids. that is one of the big things. I mean, we're still a young company. We're only 4 years old at this point, but that's definitely one of the biggest selling points, because we offer a really high quality product for the price.
Yeah, it's clear if you check out your website. Yeah, everything's really crisp. The image is great. Yeah, you guys are clearly in the, you know, top tier of being able to produce visuals. Like that proves itself, which is nice. You know, your website's well designed and it's easy to throw people over there and gain credibility, I would think.
Yep, definitely.
So, okay. So you're cruising around the floor. You're trying to find somebody who surfs. He's trying to find somebody who's in camouflage. And how do you start? Just walk up? Like what's your actual pitch?
I mean, it changed for each one, but like I was saying, it was really trying to build a relationship before trying to
but
sell
that's
them
sale.
Anything.
Like you're distinguishing between relationship and actual business, but everything's, you know.
Well, yes, but I also, for a lot of the people, I don't know, there's something about people that work in the outdoor industry. They're almost all pretty cool people to hang out with. So I genuinely want to become friends with them as well and not just kind of work with them, especially if they have a cool company. And maybe that's just me being young and naive, but
no, I don't think I think that's good. I think, you know, authenticity, like actually wanting to connect to other human beings makes you a good business person. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the genuine aspect of it, I think definitely comes through as well when you're talking to someone. They're like, all right, well, it's not a sleazy sales guy that I have to deal with for 5 minutes here. But yeah, it was just different for everyone. I mean, someone had a video, we'd look at that and then kind of talk with them about that and be like, oh yeah, we work in this realm and they had a really good commercial, we'd be like, that's awesome. Like, who made that for you guys? We might not be the right ones to work with, but if you're looking for a new partner, maybe it is. And also just like learning about their company and what they were doing, or if they had new products out. Because that's one of the cool things about outdoor retailers. They're showcasing the kind of next, the spring line or the winter line that's going to be coming out. So you get to see a lot of cool new tech and new products.
Yeah, I like the energy on a showroom floor like that. There's a big conference here that was getting bigger and bigger before the pandemic hit, but it's called Paleo FX. And it's really kind of the biggest conglomeration of alternative health people. You know, it's one of the biggest conferences in the world for that. And they had, you know, probably 100 booths on the, or better on the floor. And the cool thing about alternative health stuff with paleo is it's food-based. So all the booths are giving away, you know, fresh caught salmon. Like, it's just crazy. And so it's almost that you couldn't network with them because they were so busy giving away food. You know, it was like refugees at the back of a truck. And so I'd be there and I'd be like starting to talk to somebody. He's like, oh, I got to go, you know, give away more kombucha.
Yeah. You got to pitch to them within seconds, catch their attention. I feel like that's everything these days though. You know, you only have a few seconds to really like walk into someone. And I think this year at OR as well, it was about a quarter the capacity that it normally is. So it was big, but it wasn't, you know, what it normally is. So you had more FaceTime with people, which was good too.
So how much, like you're out there generating new biz, and it sounds like your CEO's also in there doing that. So it's probably still a team effort. How much of that do you guys need? Like, are you looking to grow? Or are you looking to sustain? Like, what's your, when you look at the amount of work and messaging work you need to bring in, what's it look like?
Definitely on the growing side of things. Our company's doubled every year we've been in business. So we're trying to keep on that trajectory, if not more. We know we want to get to a point where we have no more than 50 employees total. And I mean, that's still like, that's a lot. But we'd like to have more presences across the country and maybe even internationally. So we're definitely on a growth trajectory, but also making sure that we're keeping the quality of work where it is. If not, you know, each project, the next project, it's better than the last project. So keeping that mindset up while also keeping the growth trajectory.
So talk about like your split between commercial and sort of straight creative. Are you guys trying to do straight creative?
Sometimes, yeah. I think a lot of the times where it comes with straight creative is more so working with an agency on that side of things. We definitely like to, you know, be able to offer everything across the entire creative gamut to clients and kind of have it as like a, you know, maybe an a la carte service for them, where it's like, okay, you just need a copywriter. Like, let's get our creative team on this and come up with some ideas. Or you just need a VFX artist. We can do that too. So you can kind of, you get what you need. And I feel like a lot of agencies, they're always constantly trying to upsell you on things that you really don't need. So I think just trying to provide the most value and also fit that in with the client's budget.
You sound like a business guy. How did you pick up this? How did you pick up this terminology? This biz buzz.
I don't know.
It's funny. Everybody ends up absorbing, you know, the biz terms.
Yeah. My first business was making like coasters in eighth grade, raising money for our class field trip. We each had to make at least $300. And some kids, their parents just gave $300 and they said they raised it. But some of us, we actually made little businesses. Some people, they drew things, they had lemonade stands. And I made these rock coasters because I was in Michigan during the summers. There were all these super flat stones. Wish I had one here, I could show you. But it was carpet, and then it was these rocks glued on in a really cool pattern. And I think I made $500 off that summer. So I was pretty happy.
A better product, man. You know, you start with product.
Exactly.
So much easier to sell good product.
Oh my God. Those things were such a pain in the ass to make. My hands hurt from cutting the carpet. It was pretty thick carpet too, but it was a fun experience. I enjoyed it.
So you've always had when you talked about you guys came together in school, were you all there more towards everybody wanted to work as business people, or did they want to work as sort of entertainment creatives or artists or something like that? And they do this, because it's again, businesses pay, which is how I ended up working for businesses after, 30 years working for entertainment and academics. But
it was definitely on the creative things. Once we realized we had something going, we were like, all right, let's do this. This way, we don't have to work a 9-to-5 job and we want, but we actually played ourselves because now we work almost every day of the week and we work more than 9-to-5. But I mean, that's what it takes to build a company. And at the stage we're at, we're all young, we got the energy to put in, and we're still finding that fine line of, personal time and work time and kind of trying to not blend those two all the time. But definitely on the creative side of things. And now it's more on the business side of things. But also, I mean, everyone gets to be creative with what they're doing.
I don't mean to say that business isn't creative, but there's the pure, that's why I call it the pure creative, pure entertainment projects, do you guys still want to do some of that? Or do you have side projects that you're building out?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we have side projects, and I like to think that a lot of our commercial projects as well, we get a bunch of different creative freedom within that, obviously within the scope of work and with what the client wants. But this morning we were pitching ideas for a show at Red Rocks that's happening tomorrow, and how to tie that in with a mental health campaign. So we're all spitballing ideas for this. And I mean, it has to get approved in less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
So it keeps you on your toes, but that's still a commercial project, but we get to find the fine line of, throwing the creative spices in there while delivering a message and the call to action. So I think that's definitely the fun side of things. And, our CEO, he's one of our directors as well. And our producer, she gets to be on set. Our other main director, he's always editing and shooting. So everyone still gets to do all of that within the business, which is good.
Yeah, there's a lot happening right now with business and content. I mean, I think you're starting to see more and more, and I've been talking about this with my partner for a while, because he's never been in entertainment. He was straight SEO, straight tech sales, straight business guy. He does marketing, but it's really just, he does business. He doesn't care about, the actual messaging and that kind of stuff. Whereas I came from hardcore messaging background, and that's all I cared about. The quality of the message, and that is the only thing. Even the business considerations are supposed to be kept at bay, because that changes all the creative. So we've found a lot of spaces in between there that are interesting, and I think, yield really good work. But there's also the sense of what's happening now, that with distribution being so easy and production getting so cheap, the idea of a Red camera and just the fact that this guy's using his extra one for his picture on his conference calls, that it's starting to be possible now where brands themselves are starting to look at creating original content that can compete, hopefully at the level of a Hollywood product, because otherwise nobody's going to watch it.
Right.
But it's this kind of natural splintering of the creative production out into, everywhere. And you saw it a lot with user generated stuff, where people dump things on YouTube and all that, and that kind of familiarized everybody with it. But now it's that blended world of, it's not professional Hollywood people, but it's still people that are going to create something good, or at least high end for that brand. Can you tell a story that will engage people, whether it's about blue jeans or the VW or whatever and still really tell a story.
Right. Yeah. And I think also like with that, I mean, yeah, we're seeing so much more of it. And sometimes that makes more sense than the commercial, depending on your target audience. You know, sometimes if I see like a full block, I watch almost every ad that I get hit with because I want to know what's happening.
Sure.
So I'm one of those weird people that loves ads and getting hit with all of them. But yeah, I mean, you see such a variety of the super high production and then, you know, the selfie video. It's like, all right, well, what are you guys trying to evoke and what are you trying to sell through this product? Because yeah, it makes more sense sometimes if you have an influencer and they're posting something on their story. And then other times it makes more sense if you have, you know, $1 million commercial.
Yeah, it's funny though, watching what happens when the influencers start to hook up with the businesses and suddenly they have to work. I've always worked in Hollywood there's always conditions about the creative.
Right.
Like I worked at a show called The Best Damn Sports Show, period, for a few years. And it was half comedy and half, you know, pro sports. Athletes hate to be made fun of.
Right.
If you tell jokes about them, if you make them look bad, they won't come on your show. And so we had lots of restrictions about what we could and couldn't do. And then the guys who ran the show were sports guys and they had a bunch of friends in the sports industry, could make fun of their friends. Mm-hmm. Like, do you remember Pete Rose, baseball player, old baseball player? He gambled and he got kicked out of sports. And he always said he didn't bet on baseball. And then he finally admitted, yeah, I bet on baseball. And he was a manager in baseball. And so we had him on the show the day after he admitted this, and we couldn't make fun of him. The whole world was making fun of him.
Dang.
But
that's wild.
But that's how creative, that's what business does to creative. It's got to limit it so it doesn't reflect back on the brand.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, yeah, we see a lot of that, especially with just censoring all kinds of things these days. And I mean, it brings up a good conversation of, you know, what should be censored and what shouldn't be. I mean, that's another topic, but it's an interesting one to think about.
So do you guys, like, how edgy do you pitch? Like, are you guys sort of down the center? Yeah, like, you don't seem to be, I've looked at your website. You're not conservative creatively, but you're not sort of super crazy out there either.
Mm-mm. I mean, it really depends on the brand. We've turned away work where they didn't align with our company's beliefs. And that, I feel like our creative a lot of times is down the center. But yeah, if companies come to us and they are on one side or another, if it doesn't align with our company values, we won't take the work. And I think that's a strong line in the sand there that we will not cross over.
What does that mean to you?
We had one company that did not support gay rights. And we said, nope, we're not going to work with you guys. You don't align with our values. So this is, you know, sorry, but no.
Was so that Westboro Church or whatever? Were they coming in?
No, it wasn't. But it things like that, you know. And we also have other clients that have asked
us. Were you guys, did they reach out to you guys to do a little video rebrand?
No, definitely not. If it was, I think we would have had to have a chat with the FBI.
So funny. Like, but, even, you know, like I always, you know, I throw jokes into this stuff, but it's like this idea of business working for business for me, like as somebody who came from hardcore stand-up comedy and club stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Like I've spent a lot of time in business, not saying things just because, you know, like people aren't used to in that in conservative environment, really dealing with creatives. Because a lot of times creatives just want to bounce things around and punch at the envelope and see where you can go. They know it's not going to be used, but that energy in the room is what drives the creativity. But business cannot adapt to that.
Totally. Yeah. No, you definitely have to step out of the comfort realm. I mean, that's where some of the greatest ideas come from. But yeah, I feel like if I'm trying to think of like any other projects where something like that came up. I can't really think of any off the top of my head. and maybe we haven't worked on any that were super provocative, but I feel like
y'all don't really do social issue stuff, do you? I don't see a lot of that. Maybe some of your documentaries, but they're mostly sports, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty much all sports. On the, like, personally, I know some of us have done some things. I was doing some freelance photojournalism during the protests last year. And I'm trying to think of what else. I think that was pretty much it. Yeah, I mean, we haven't really had any clients in that space. Mostly, I guess, on the social issue side of things, it's awareness campaigns and things like that, primarily for mental health, and then different nonprofits that have different causes.
There was a guy down here is a really good commercial director. His name's Scott Rice, and he has a little film company. He's done some great stuff, but he did a show for a little while. He called me one day and he's like, "Hey, do you know crazy stand-ups in Austin? Like, crazy." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, I've had this, a company bought this pitch from us, or they brought me in for a pitch they bought where they're going to take like 10 stand-ups who have mental illnesses. And they're going to do a season around them. Like here, I don't know what the format so much for the show was, other than the fact that they had these 10 people on it and they were exploring their lives and their stand-up." Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was like a competition for the craziest one wins or something, but it was really exploring mental health. And mm-hmm. I mean, like, there are people who are diagnosed bipolar or depressed or whatever, but still, you know, worked as entertainers. And right. So it was interesting to watch, you know, that come together about, you know, trying to take that stuff and turn it into entertainment without trivializing it and totally. Talk about it without it being boring or lectury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many different like ways to go about all of that. And I mean, I think also like so many people, they look back at videos and campaigns and commercials and just different types of content from years ago. And they're like, you know, that would not fly today. But yeah, definitely a fine line.
So if you guys tell me what success is starting to look like, what success look like for you guys in the next few years and down the road? Like, who do you want to be when you grow up?
Still figuring that last one out. And I think I'll always be figuring that out. I feel like no one actually knows what they want to be or who they are. And I feel like if they know
that sounds
exactly
like a response from a guy in his 20s. Get in your 50s. Get in your 50s and you figured out a couple of things. You'd be like, "Oh yeah, I'm definitely not all that."
Right, right. I think I figured out some things I like and I don't like. Just through, I don't know, different like life experience, going to boarding school, being able to, you know, see a lot of different cultures and kind of interact with people that I wouldn't normally interact with in my normal day to day. But I think success for us right now is really, we've been having some amazing conversations with huge household name brands. And that's, we're always like, where did they hear about us? How
yeah,
do they
cool.
know us?
Yeah.
And we had a conversation, 3 weeks ago, I think, from a huge, huge apparel company. And we straight up asked them, we said, "How do you know who we are?" And they were like, "Well, there's only a handful of production companies and production agencies in Denver that, you know, are at a certain caliber of work." And we're like, "Wait, us? We're there, really?" So I think it's things like that. It's conversations, it's people just knowing who we are, and we're always amazed. And it's just, we're very grateful to have some of the conversations we're having right now and work with some of the brands we are currently working with and going to be working with soon.
Well, there's this weird sense. I remember this going through when I first started teaching college. I was up there lecturing I was in my 20s, your age. And I was like, "Why are y'all listening to me? This is, you know," it wasn't imposter syndrome so much so as like, "Oh, I actually am kind of an imposter, you know, because this is new to me and I'm, you know, I've studied a lot of stuff. I had a master's degree at that point. But it's the sense that you have to at some point go, "Oh, it's all an illusion of super competence. Like, as long as you get to competence, you're just fine."
Totally.
Like, you look at everybody else and you're like, "Oh, they know so much." And then you start talking to them, you're like, "Yeah, they know some, but they know that much more than me, you know."
Totally. Yeah. I had the exact same thing. I was a guest lecturer for a class last spring. I'm like, I'm a year out of college. I don't know what advice I can offer to these kids. And yeah, I definitely felt that imposter syndrome. But yeah, no, I agree with you that the confidence and all that's really where people are like, all right, they know exactly what they're doing. And
I think like you're experiencing where you start to talk to big brands and mm-hmm. it has some kind of cultural cachet and you've known about them forever. And suddenly you're in that room. You're like, oh, okay, this is just people still talking about the same stuff.
Totally. I think a lot of that came from, when the four of us joined forces, my network was pretty much all in the music industry. And so I was working with A-list celebrities and, you know, people who on a day-to-day basis, starstruck, you know, a lot of people whenever they walk by, like, oh my God, is that so-and-so? And I think from that experience, that's definitely where I learned we're all just people. We're all the same. Some of us are just known a little more than others and have some other expertise that most people don't. You know, they're just really, really good at their craft. And they've honed in on that and they've mastered what they're doing. And I think that's it. And, you know, yeah, that's great. It's great to idolize people and look up to them and all that. But I think you got to make sure that you're also doing it in the right way. And it's like, you're looking up to them. And it's like, all right, you know, I can totally get to where they are at.
Yeah. I think too, like when you're in production, you start to realize how much of that is constructed.
Aura. Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know? It's like, oh yeah, I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago, like with Michael Jackson, that moonwalk, like he clearly didn't come up with that moonwalk. Mm-hmm. Like who created the moonwalk?
Yeah.
That's the person who's actually the talent. He could do it well, but he was just the first guy to do it in front of a billion people. Suddenly it's his now. Like, where's the real talent, you know, behind this? And so when you're in production, you start to quickly realize that everybody that becomes a star like that is an amalgamation of all these people around them that have infused mm-hmm. and they're good at taking that stuff and showing it, but they didn't create all of that.
No, it's a good marketing agency. I mean, that's like, I remember, I forget who told me this, but they were saying bacon and eggs, you know, that combo came from a marketing department.
Oh, really?
That like, yeah. And I was like, wait, what? Seriously? Like a classic American breakfast, a marketing department came up with that. And like the truck emoji on iPhones, that was from one of Ford's agencies because you're not allowed to pay for an emoji. So they convinced and had an individual send in this whole application and it looks exactly like a Ford F-150. And there's so many different things. And I mean, I haven't dove into it too much, but there's tons of different things like that where it's like, all right, someone who's really good at marketing a product came up with this idea.
Yeah. And I think now with the culture, the way it is and the speed of image transfer and adjustment and all this, like you can just, there's a great documentary. I don't know if you've ever seen it called Burt's Buzz. And it's about the guy who started Burt's Bees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a cool documentary because it goes in and shows just how it was all just a construct. He was a drunk, crazy drunk, living in Maine somewhere in the woods and was trying to figure out how to make money to buy his alcohol. And somebody had left beehives. And so he went to the local library and got some books that showed him how to make honey and like some other things from beehives. And then he sold honey beside the road in these big jars so he could buy booze. And then a woman who had also gone to the woods with her kids was this hardcore marketing person. And she met him and they had a relationship. And she was like, oh, I'm going to turn you into a brand and just start hiring local artists and everything to turn him into a brand. And so she just paid him almost nothing and just kept cycling through until somebody one day did a wood carving of that mm-hmm. face that is on everything.
Yeah.
And it's just a little wood carving stamp that some local artist made and it encapsulated everything. And suddenly it's an $800 million business that they sell. And
I did not know that story. That's crazy.
It's a great documentary. He's a nut. Yeah.
That's just clever too, you know?
Well, it's clever, but
people thinking outside the box, finding a creative solution to a problem.
I try to explain to people a lot of times, like, clever is great, but quantity will actually overwhelm clever every time. Like, if you do 800 images and you get one super image, that's probably about the right ratio. It's right. Not doing the 800 is what gets you, you know, doesn't get you there. Like with jokes and things like that, you've got to cycle through so many, you know, and then suddenly you find one that just everybody in the world loves it and it elevates everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can only imagine how many jokes you have written during your lifetime.
Over 100,000. I've estimated at least over 100,000.
Oh, that's crazy. That's just crazy.
And that's why I'm so famous, because they're so good. I've been elevated.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Everybody knows me.
Becoming a master. Yeah, I think I don't even know how many photos I've taken.
Are there a few that stand out that when people see them, they just react like they're triggery?
Yeah, definitely. I have a couple landscape shots. Actually, two of them are framed on my wall. One's from Svalbard up in the Arctic Circle. It's just this vast landscape of ice. And then you see this tiny group of people that look like ants walking right by this, right by the water. And it just kind of like puts the world into perspective. And another one, I guess, on the landscape side of things is out of the
helicopter. I like that you're looking at them, even though you, like, we can't see them, but you're enjoying them again.
Yep. Oh, I'm loving this. Seeing how well I can, you know, use the
you're painting the words to explain the picture.
Exactly. And everyone that hears this is going to have a different picture in their head, which is also awesome. The other one is from a helicopter. It's this beautiful coastline, and the mist and the fog was coming through the coast as the sun was just beaming through. So there's these light rays slashing down the mountain into the water. There's like a little beach down there too.
Nice.
But then some shots of musical artists as well. I'm trying to think, a couple rappers, those broke the internet. And then a first look of this one NFL player when he switched teams. That was an instant hit. But yeah, I think those are a couple of ones that come to mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. That stuff, again, thousands and thousands and thousands of photos, and these 10 just like blow people's brains open.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. It's like, yeah, I mean, if I could get a shot like that every time, that'd be great. But, you know, that's also the beauty of it. And I think also with that is like a lot of the moments too that I guess you get to capture. So have you seen The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
I know what it is.
Okay, so there's one scene in there when they're up in the Himalayan mountains and the guy is about to take a photo of the snow leopard. And, you know, Walter goes up there and he's like, well, are you going to take the photo or not? He goes, sometimes you just got to enjoy the moment. And I remember after seeing that, I was like, I am going to start to incorporate that into my life. Because before then, I was taking photos of everything. And like the other day I went camping with my friends and one of them was like, you know, you bringing your camera up? And I was like, no, like, honestly, I want to enjoy this with you guys. This is for us. This is not for other people. This is us. And like, this is a memory that we all are going to share together and no one else needs to have it. So I think lessons like that and just like fun little things. I mean, it came from a movie too.
I
would have expected to get that, but it had such an impact in kind of my life and the way I was looking at capturing the world around me. Cause I've always thought like a photographer is someone that's freezing time and just freezing a moment in history. They're actively capturing history as it unfolds. It's kind of one way I've always looked at it. And those moments of history that you're not capturing, those are private and intimate moments that you and anyone else around you are going to share, but everyone else they'll never know because it didn't happen to them.
Right. Yeah, it's weird moving back and forth between actual human and artist, you know, capturer, or like even as a comedy writer, you learn very quickly that your real life is valuable. It's valuable to mine your life and your relationships and things like that. But people get balky when you stop an argument to write something down.
Right.
Because you don't write it down, you'll never remember the way your brain just snapped at it, you know, in that moment, like a comedy crocodile.
Definitely. Yeah. I feel like on the creative side of things too, like one of my buddies, Hudson, he and I, we always have this conversation of, you know, whether, especially with images and just kind of capturing things in general, whether you're taking it or making it. And I'm more of the type, I love to take it and capture it, and he loves to make it. And that's always a fun little distinction whenever I'm kind of talking with people that are getting in the space. I'm like, well, what do you like doing? Do you like taking it or making it? So it was a fun little conversation starter.
Yeah, I think all those things, one of the things I've, again, business doesn't like a lot of intellectualism, but I'm an intellectual by nature. And when you're a professor, you can wander for as long as you want on take it versus make it. You know, you can teach a semester course on that and, you know, come up with all this stuff and this depth to it and just explore it. And a lot of times I miss that. I miss the ability to just luxuriate, in ideas or thoughts like that. Because the farther you go down into them, the mixier they get and the more, you know, murkier in depth. And you're like, wait a minute, now I thought I made this, but actually my choices were dictated to me by my experiences. So I'm just a result of my experiences. So I'm still not choosing.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. That I miss the philosophy side of things from school. I think having those types of conversations, those always intrigue me so much because, yeah, everyone has a different opinion on it and a different answer, and they can justify things in completely different ways. And then you spend 3 hours talking about something random, and you know, it's not a deep conversation, and 3 hours later you're like, wow, I just got to know you really well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's I like doing this podcast because it's an intersection of intellectualism and comedy and professionalism, you know, so it's got all these things in it. And I there's so much in rhetoric, like when you start deep studying the effect language has on people. And that's the core of rhetoric. It's so right now, you know, we just pulled out of Afghanistan and the whole world is falling apart in Afghanistan. And I'm watching just the ways it's being talked about in our public discourse. Right. And there was a great little tweet. I follow maybe 1500 people on Twitter, and most of them are just really interesting, just great writers, comics, thinkers. It's just so much fun to scroll through there and just get the little shards of their thoughts.
Yeah.
And a guy posted, he goes, well, in the era of instant expertise, I'm curious now what everybody's going to suddenly become expert on Afghanistan. And I was like, that's exactly it. That idea of there's all these things going on in the world, and when one pops up into the media, suddenly you're supposed to have an opinion on it. Most people couldn't pick Afghanistan off a map if they were, you know, paid $1 million to do it. But now everybody's sitting there talking as if they understand Afghanistan. And I'm like, that's fascinating that suddenly we're doing that. And so like for me, when you get into those big political things and big social issues and public discourse, it's really fascinating. It becomes like that. And if you had the time for us to really talk about Afghanistan with experts, maybe we would have an opinion that's worth listening to, but that doesn't slow people down at all. There's all sorts of just flurry of opinions that aren't worth listening to.
Yeah. And I mean, half the time people don't take the time to do the research to come up with an actual opinion. It's just regurgitating knowledge that they heard, read, or saw somewhere from someone they think is knowledgeable on some aspect.
Yeah, it's fascinating too, the idea of expertise. I talk to my 19-year-old son about this a lot because he's delaying college because he just got hired by a gaming company in San Diego as a full-time producer. You know, he's going to be making 100K at 19 years old. And I'm like, go for it. So,
yeah,
but he does feel the fact that he doesn't have an education. So he's wanting to at least sort of wander through that someone on his own because he wants to be in the conversation. And I'm pointed out to him, like almost everybody who's getting expert or doing their research, they never read an actual book. They never talk to an actual person. They just jump online. I'm like, that means everything is coming mediated through Google and the internet and everything else. And you're going to have a hard time reaching expert or even adequate status with that kind of information coming at you. So, you know, you get this sense of like everybody consumes topics like that quickly and your brain will go, oh, I know enough now to say something. And you're like, nah, probably not. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. That'd be cool if there was some way where you could just patch in and talk to some, like a local somewhere in some country that's going through some issue and just be like, hey, what's really happening? Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, even here in the States, it's, you got people from all over and you're like, all right, well, I go on Twitter and look up this hashtag, I'm going to see everything that's happening from this opinion, but who's actually experiencing it? I think that's the other thing. And I think also that's like on the media side of things is like the people that are telling you what's happening are not experiencing it. So they can't really give you the full details on what is happening. And I think like, so I studied abroad in my junior year of college. I did semester at sea and we
really
sailed. Yeah. We sailed around on a ship, sailed around. We went to, 13 countries and 15 different.
That's cool. I've never heard of that cities. Before.
Yeah. It's really, really sweet. It's an amazing program. And one of the cool things is you're immersed in all kinds of different cultures. You're going to Asia and Africa and Europe and just all over. And you're spending about a week in each country. So during that week, you don't have classes and you can roam the country freely wherever you want, pretty much. When we were there, India and Pakistan were having a little, there was some tension. So we were not allowed to go to northern India.
Really?
Yeah.
India?
Yeah.
Pakistan? No. Not getting along?
It was cool because you got to talk to all these different people with different viewpoints. And I mean, sometimes you both didn't even speak the same language, but you could have an interaction with them, whether it was, you know, exchanging something or just hanging out with them, whatever it was. You didn't actually have to talk to them, but you got to understand them a little bit through just being there with them, which was really, really cool. And opened, at least for me, it opened my eyes a bit to being like, all right, well, you know, everything that so-and-so is saying on this station probably isn't true.
Yeah. By definition, it's not true. None of it's true.
Exactly. And that's why, like, with documentaries too, I think with documentaries, the other thing is like, what's the word? Not assumed truth, but not all documentaries are truthful. And I think so many people go into watching a documentary with like, these are exactly the facts. This is exactly what happened. And it's like, no, but yes, there is an area there is truthfulness around it, but everyone has an opinion. We're all human. You know, that's just part of being a human.
Well, truth is it's a problematic concept. It fragments really easily. It fractures and it absorbs falseness very easily. It mixes with falseness very easily. Truth is that's a tough one. But like documentaries, I had a lot of friends who were producers, reality show producers. And there was one that Sylvester Stallone had for a while, some boxing reality show where they, you know, beat on each other until one emerged as the victor. And he was the producer on that. And he used to talk about the different things they did to just rile these guys up so they'd be, you know, emotional before the fight. Mm-hmm. Because nobody wants to hear just a dry, boring interview. They want to hear some guy in some emotional trauma and then be able to root for him or against him in the ring.
Hell yeah.
So, you know, those have the hues of documentaries, but everything is a choice. Like you have 5,000 hours of footage and your documentary is an hour and 27 minutes long. So you've made lots of choices.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Well, cool, man. I won't keep you too long. It's a work day. I appreciate you jumping on here and talking about your stuff.
Definitely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah. Promote your company a little bit. Tell everybody, you know, where to find Boulder Media in Denver, Colorado.
Definitely. Yeah. You can, if you want to check out our website, it's bouldermediahouse.com and also on Instagram and Facebook at Boulder Media House. You can check out our music branch as well if you're into that. It's at Beach House, BCH House. And then our athletics department is BMH Athletics. And if you're interested in making a commercial or a campaign, feel free to hit us up.
Yeah, reach out. As long as you're not the KKK, they'll work with you.
Exactly.
We've established parameters for Boulder Media House. They have
standards. Yes. Yes, that we do.
Well, we figured out the KKK is beyond your standards. We haven't really moved our way up to, you know, the ones that are iffy. Maybe there's somebody in the
middle. We'll get there when we get there.
I think you'll make good choices. I think you guys sound like you're a good company and like you've got good energy. And again, I appreciate you jumping on here and talking for an hour. Everybody, that is Jeremy Elder from Boulder Media House. Pop over there, check those guys out. This has been the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. Get out there, persuade some people. As always, they need it. Thanks, man. Oh, wait a minute. I gotta hold on.